You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You are now entering the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, a show that uncovers what's fact, what's fake, and what's fun in the crazy world of pseudo-archaeology. Hello and welcome to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 161. And tonight, the Dead Sea Scrolls. Seriously, they're pretty cool. Okay, well, welcome back, everyone. I know that my audience is vast and deep. I'm going to do the Dead Sea Scrolls today because for a very specific reason. The Dead Sea Scrolls are currently at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library, and I actually live maybe 10 minutes away, and where I teach at Moore Park College, that's like 10 minutes away as well. So the Ronald Reagan Library looms large in our kind of local village here, right? And I knew that the Dead Sea Scrolls were there, and I was really excited to go. And actually, I'm going to take some of my students too pretty soon. And recently, out of nowhere, which was really fantastic, the Ronald Reagan Library actually contacted me. And they just sent a really nice email. And they basically said, hey, we have the Dead Sea Scrolls here. We've been talking to kind of local religious figures, you know, local community figures about the Dead Sea Scrolls. And we figure we need an archaeologist. And you are physically the closest archaeologist, so do you want to come up? And I said, sure. And they were very gracious. I got to kind of go check out the Dead Sea Scrolls like 15 minutes before the rest of the crowds got there. And I do have to say, you guys, they're really cool. Really impressive. The thing that really took me by surprise with the scrolls were how well preserved they are. Because, you know, in archaeology, I've seen, of course, all kinds of stuff, you know, in my career. And I kind of have preconceived notions on certain things. And one thing I just didn't expect was how easy they are to read, you know. And of course, they're in pieces, you know, that you sort of have these chunks of parchment. But the writing on them is very, very clear, and they are just really impressive archaeological artifacts. And I do also have to say that in terms of the show, the Ronald Reagan Library does an amazing job. Their museum exhibits are world class. I've seen things they've done in the past, other stuff. I saw one they did several years ago on Pompeii, just really, really great. And I do have to say, one of the most foolish things you could do would be to be like, you know what? I'm not going to go see the Dead Sea Scrolls because I'm a Democrat and Ronald Reagan was a Republican. That would be the most foolish thing, right? This does not matter what your political views are. This is an excellent, excellent show. And I do have to say, and this has happened to me a bit in the past too, the Ronald Reagan Library always treats me just really well, really professional. So while I was there, they filmed me a little bit just looking at the Dead Sea Scrolls, right? And then they also interviewed me just a bit. I was working with them for maybe 45 minutes or so. It was quite quick. And so in their current round of commercials, you'll see me, right? I'm like one of the guys looking at the Dead Sea Scrolls and I'm saying a few things. And I will say they are honest. What's so nice is I didn't have to lie and go, yeah, I really like them, you know, and then secretly be like, oh, that sucked. I was just being honest in the moment. They really are that cool. If you are anywhere in the LA area, it's worth the trip. And on top of that, if you've never been there, I would also stay later and just look at all the Ronald Reagan stuff, because it really is a time capsule back into the 1980s, you know, and for those of us who are in sort of the Gen X world of things, you'll remember all this stuff. Like I walked around and looked at the Ronald Reagan stuff after, you know, checking out the Dead Sea Scrolls, and I'd sort of forgotten. I hadn't looked at it in a while. how sort of impactful and what a moment in time, Berlin Wall coming down, you know, and they also have the presidential plane. They have Air Force One. They have the older Air Force One, Reagan's Air Force One there. So you can check out the plane as well. Just, it was really, really cool. The whole experience is great. What can I say? I'm a living, breathing commercial right now for the Ronald Reagan Library, and I don't mind. They really do top quality. So you got to see these Dead Sea Scrolls. So what's the deal with the Dead Sea Scrolls? You know, why must you see them? Well, they were found basically in 1947. That some of them might have been starting to be found in late 1946. I forget. But by 1947, these things are found, but they're found under very odd circumstances where the story is, and the story I largely believe, I think is largely true, where there were some Bedouin goat herders and they're cruising along these cliffs on the north side of the Dead Sea. Now, we might have to back up and say, where exactly is this? So this is like maybe a mile away from the Dead Sea, straight north. We're still in Israel. We're in the West Bank area of Israel. And we're also not very far away at all from Jordan, right? So right there, you know, there's what sort of political strife could there possibly be in an area like that? But anyway, that's where that is, right? We're talking, you know, Middle East, front row center. And at this time, the story goes, these goat herders are cruising along that area. They've lost one of their goats. They go try and look for their goats. And whichever story you want, they basically stumble across these caves. And inside these caves, there's a bunch of broken up pieces of parchment with all these writings on them, and they instantly know, oh my God, this is something very important. So then they sell these parchment pieces to basically to an antiquities dealer. So this is in 1947, and they're sold to an antiquities dealer in like 1948 or so. And then the antiquities dealer is going to sell these onward to like collectors, and ultimately at the time, like universities are starting to hear about this. Now, all of this, unfortunately, is looting. You know what I mean? They were found in a looting manner. And that is the one thing about this story, you guys. I cannot say one way or another the truth or not of the intricacies of the story. The truth is these Bedouin herders did find these pieces of parchment and sold them onward. That's all true. But the whole story about the goat, I kind of think they were looking. I kind of think they were like actively looting. You know what I mean? Because these are caves and hillsides and stuff. Your goat went up there. I don't know. And what would you do if you are accused of looting? You're like, hey, I see you have these looted scrolls. How'd you get these? You're not going to be like, well, I was looting. You're going to be like, dude, I was just out there with my goats, you know, and one of them, shocking. I know it's weird. One of the goats just went in this cave and then I tried to get the goat and I was like, oh, wait, what's this? So, I mean, do you blame me? You see, so who's to say one way or another, but as 1948 goes along into 1949, that this is becoming a big deal. It's like, oh my God, this is a big find, right? We've seen this at other times and places and other spots in the world. In Egypt, there's a famous 1881 cache that was found by looters. And all of a sudden on the black market, all this really high-end Egyptian artifacts comes up, right? This is kind of the same thing. Except this happens in 1947. So they figured out, they're like, oh my God, this is a real deal. So they, of course, send a team back in 1949. And the site is kind of refound. It's identified. It's in the, you know, Qumran area. You may have seen that term Qumran that goes with the Dead Sea Scrolls. And there's a series of caves and they just number them up. Very classic archaeology. Cave 1, Cave 2, Cave 3, Cave 4. Up through, I believe, 11. Actually, yeah, 11. And the reason why I mess this up sometimes is that there was also a 12th one found, but the 12th one was found in 2017. Unfortunately, the 12th one is all looted, you know, of course. But hey, it shows you that new things can still be found. Anyway, they found up to, you know, 11 at the time. And then in the following year, from 1949 to 1956 or so, it's that classic race between archaeologists and looters to find as much of the remaining Dead Sea Scrolls as possible. They're going to ultimately find, you'll see different numbers. You'll see like between 800 and 900 actual manuscripts. Now, they're all in chunks. Don't think of this as it's a scroll you can roll out. That's not right. But it's 800 or 900 individual manuscripts in like 15,000 pieces, right? So that gives you an idea. It's a lot of scrolls in a ton of pieces. And, you know, a really big piece wouldn't even be the size of a like 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, right? It's smaller than that. So these are like small little chunks. But the importance of this really just can't be understated. What is the importance of this? Well, you're going to have to wait and find out. Hello, and welcome back to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 161. I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, and we have been discussing the Dead Sea Scrolls. And I was just leaving you on a cliffhanger. And I know none of you left after the cliffhanger. You're like, no, I need to know. Why are the Dead Sea Scrolls so important? Now, you know, there's always lists of like top 10 most important artifacts ever found in archaeology. And the Dead Sea Scrolls are often on that. And I think that's a fair ball. You know, they are supremely important because they deal with what I guess I would call realities of the Bible. Right? Realities of the Old Testament. These Dead Sea Scrolls date to between like 200 BC and 100 AD. And if you think of the dates of Jesus and so forth, those dates are good, right? In terms of important time of the Bible. Now, as I said, these are the Old Testament. These are fragments of the Old Testament. And they have fragments of every single book of the Old Testament, all the way from Isaiah. Book of Isaiah has everything. They have the entire book of Isaiah, if you piece together some of the Dead Sea Scrolls, right? All the way on the flip side, they have none of the book of Esther. But of every other Old Testament book, they have some or most or half, you know. So that's very impressive. Now, on top of the importance of the Old Testament fragments, there's also other fragments of stuff in there that some of the scrolls just talk about, like local rules and laws of the time. And there are also other religious writings that aren't Old Testament stuff. But man, however you cut it, this is amazing stuff. They are mostly written in Hebrew with a handful, I believe, written in Aramaic, and is still another tiny handful full written in Greek. People ask who wrote them. Whew, that's a toughie. I think you could guess vaguely Jewish people who were in that area at the time. Now, were they stationary in that area and wrote them there, or were they running away from the Romans at the time? Were they hiding the Dead Sea Scrolls in these caves to keep them away from the Romans? That stuff, you can kind of argue back and forth, right? But either way, it is vaguely local to that area. And I think I didn't say this, that the scrolls, when they're found, are in these like ceramic jars, basically, right? In a way, it reminds me some of the Baghdad Battery. Remember that? The Baghdad Battery that is not a battery at all. It's a scroll holder. Same idea. It's just that they don't have the metal rod and so forth that the Mesopotamian stuff had. But the idea of keeping scrolls inside a ceramic vessel to keep it safe, to keep it good, right, is something we see in both cases. Another common thing that people ask about the Dead Sea Scrolls is about that whole parchment thing. And I have to admit to you guys, I constantly forget slash don't know slash get a little confused about what parchment actually is. You know, like, what is parchment? It's animal skin, right? Animal hide. And in this case, the huge percentage of this, of the Dead Sea Scrolls, were written on goat hide. Now, don't think of this as like a woolly mammoth hide, you know, that's all hairy and stuff. It's not like that. Think of it much more as like very thin, fine leather that's sort of like a grayish or tannish, very light colored, right? It's very sort of, I don't know what you would say, maybe processed or, you know, kind of dried over time, of course. So that's what parchment is. You will also find this made out of like calf skin, gazelle, and even ibex, stuff like that from the time. But we're looking at animal hide, the huge percentage of this animal hide. Some of them are papyrus, which is going to be the classic paper situation. And there's even one that was like made out of copper, like a little copper, hammered out copper roll. So you have these various materials, but mainly, really, this is like a goat skin kind of situation. Other questions I get on this is like, how do you know how old they are? Carbon 14 dating to the rescue, my friends. It's organic material, right? It's animal skin. So that's great. On top of that, everything else corroborates these dates. I am 110% happy with these dates, right? Because you're also going to find artifacts from the time. I must say the Ronald Reagan Library also has a really great set of these artifacts from the time, whether they be like ceramic vessels and so on, that are of the style of the time of, you know, 100 BC or in that vicinity. So I'm way sold. These are from that period. The evidence is overwhelming and great. And that brings up another important idea, which is the Dead Sea Scrolls are real. Right. I know we're on the pseudo archaeology channel, and don't worry, I will tell you a funny story at the end. But the setup is, remember, that these are real. And I think that gets lost because there's so much pseudo archaeology, fake BS with the Atlantis and the like complex super civilization at the end of the Ice Age, all that pure nonsense crap. And it's sad because I think the Dead Sea Scrolls are so fantastic and they're real, you know, so the Dead Sea Scrolls don't need a fake story. They're the genuine article, you know, and honestly, for me, for years, when I was first getting into archaeology and stuff, I didn't know if they were real or not, because they would sort of be half-assed covered on kind of pseudo archaeological shows, like something like In Search Of, or, you know, those kinds of things. Talk about the Dead Sea Scrolls, and I'd be like, are those even real? Is it? I would conflate it with Shroud of Turin, you know, because these are both like religious iconographic artifacts. But Shroud of Turin, totally fake. Dead Sea Scrolls, totally real. And yet again, it's because of the reality of these objects that I really am telling you, man, don't walk, run to the Reagan Library to check these out. I can't remember if I even said this before, but they'll be at the Reagan Library throughout the summer. I think I'm recording this mid-April. And so they're going to be here through the summer. I believe their last day is September 2nd, 2025. So they're going to be around. I also know that they change out the Dead Sea Scrolls, meaning they have a bunch of them. They put some out, and also realize there's not just like two panels of them. There's like 10 or 12 different panels that are arranged in like a semicircle. The room is very dark, low lit. And so you take time. It's not like going to see the Mona Lisa where there's one thing and a ton of people crowded around this like one piece of parchment. It's not. There's a bunch of them. So you can really take time and just look at them really in awe and be like, man, that is 2,000 years old and you can still read that. That's amazing. When we come back, let's roll up the Dead Sea Scrolls. Huh? That's right. You know you love it. Hello and welcome back to the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast, episode 161. We are doing the Dead Sea Scrolls, and this is our last bits and pieces of the Dead Sea Scrolls. I know. Why did you even come back? I know. Sometimes we just choose poorly. So, a couple things here. First, you know, people ask, like, what was your favorite part of the Dead Sea Scrolls? And check this out. My favorite part was, as I looked through them, there was one piece, and it was a pretty big chunk. You know, this is maybe like 6 inches by 8 inches or something, and the writing on it is quite small. But it was my favorite piece, and honestly, I forget which book it was out of. But what made it my favorite wasn't what it was about. It was what the writer had to do. The writer messed up and had to write the right word above the main text. You know, it's just like when you're writing something, or in the olden days when you had to type something on a typewriter and you forgot a word or something. And you know how you put that like little upside down V underneath and then say, and then write the word above. And it's like, oh, this word belongs there. I couldn't see any upside down V. I don't think they use the upside down V to be like, oh, this word belongs. But you could see really clearly these like word or two or three that were right above, you know, where he or she should have written it in, but forgot. So a mistake. And it totally makes sense because you're writing this document. They're in excellent penmanship or calligraphy, right? They really look good. So it's not like everyone could write 2,000 years ago, you know, so you're doing this great job and you've already started in on it. And then you have this little piece, you know, and it's so human. You can imagine the scribe writing and then going, ah, damn it, you know, and then like going back and like kind of writing a little bit up top and being like, man, I hope they take this. And I guess they did. So that was my number one favorite. As you guys most likely know, when it comes to archaeology artifacts, I always like those human moments. I like those much better than, hey, wait, how many ounces of gold is this? Ooh, that's a very big jade necklace. I don't even care. You know, I need that human connection. And the mistake on the Dead Sea Scrolls is one of my favorites. It was just great. Now, I did promise a funny and or silly story at the end here about the Dead Sea Scrolls. And as we know, these are real, right? So because they are authentic, people want them, right? And of course, the black market is always going to want these kind of things, and they're going to fetch top dollar and all this kind of stuff. In the early 2000s, I guess I would say, up until the last several years ago, Hobby Lobby, if you guys know Hobby Lobby, they're just like a craft store, but they're very conservative, right? The owners, kind of like Chick-fil-A, if you guys know that story. It's very, very similar. Owners very conservative. In fact, in Washington, D.C., they bankroll a museum of the Bible, which is actually a building where you can go in, and they say it's not, you know, that's sort of neutral, but it's very conservative. So what they were doing, and you might have heard bits and pieces about this. First, when the Iraq War broke out in like early 2000s, they were buying looted antiquities, right, from the Iraq War, and it made them look really bad, and they ultimately had to give them back and all that kind of good stuff. It also turns out that they were buying Dead Sea Scrolls. Right. And so they bought these pieces of Dead Sea Scrolls and they put them up, and until people started to look closely at them, you know, scholars and this kind of stuff. And we're like, wait, these Dead Sea Scrolls don't make any sense. And they're sitting there in the Museum of the Bible. And it's because they were all fake. So Hobby Lobby had been taken by these, you know, scam antiquities dealers, and they'd spent millions of dollars on fake Dead Sea Scroll pieces. And the forgeries were pretty good, but I love the way they figured this out. I do believe that the forgeries would have passed a carbon 14 test. I've seen stuff like this before, you guys. But see, what they did was they most likely took parchment, and it also was most likely leather. Like, so it wasn't quite right. It was from like a cow, you know, it's not like goat parchment. From like sandals or this kind of thing, from something else that wasn't, you know, that wasn't the Dead Sea Scrolls from the time. So you buy actual ancient, in this case, ancient leather. So you test it with carbon 14 and you go, oh, wait, hey, this is 2000 years old. But the actual leather from that time, you'd have to spend some money, but nothing like what a piece of the Dead Sea Scrolls will cost. Then you have somebody write on it and forge it. Right. You write Dead Sea Scroll kind of stuff. And then you go, hey, here this is. And that is a problem in that it's sort of illegal antiquities world. Again, I've seen this more than once, this idea of taking something ancient, but not worth much on the market, and then gussying it up to make it something super duper. They also figured this out, I believe. They looked closely at the leather itself and how how the ink like soaked into the cracks in the leather. And you see, if it was written when the leather was new, the ink wouldn't have soaked into the cracks. See, like it could only soak into the cracks if you were using recent ink on ancient leather, because the ancient leather's all cracked up. I was really impressed by that. I was like, good for them, you know, catching on to this, figuring this out, that these are all fake. The other place I've seen forgeries like this is, of course, in the Maya world, the same idea, but on ceramic vessels, where somehow you get like a classic Maya ceramic jar from like 700 AD, but it's just plain. And that's going to cost you some money, but nothing like a multicolored jar with like images of kings on it, right? And hieroglyphics. So you get the plain jar, but then you have someone else fake the multicolored images and stuff. And then you sell it as a, you know, real, what we would call polychrome, right? Many colored jar, and you get way more money. So the Hobby Lobby crew, you know, looked like fools, and which they are. It drives me nuts that still today people would do something that stupid as like to just keep trying to buy artifacts for your dumb museum. It's like, come on, man. So, and one time wasn't enough. It's like you already get caught for buying looted artifacts from Iraq, and you're like, no, I'm going to keep going with the Dead Sea Scrolls. And they thought they were real, right? But nope, forgeries that have their own interest to them. So in the end, I think you could tell from my voice and how I felt about this. I was really impressed with the Dead Sea Scrolls. And I think part of it, too, is I spend a lot of my archaeology time like in the Maya world, right? Working on the ancient Maya or working in local California archaeology. And I know a decent bit about like Egypt and that kind of thing, but I'm not super refined on, I guess we would call it biblical archaeology or stuff from the Near East like that. So very impressive. I really had my little archaeology moment there where I was just there in the dim with the scrolls. And oh, by the way, they keep the lights dim because the scroll fragments can only be taken out for a few weeks and then they're put back in the dark for years. So actually the Ronald Reagan Library changes out the different pieces every few weeks. And it was great. And isn't it odd for me to end on such a high note, on me being happy on this show? But I am. I was happy. It was awesome. Go see the Dead Sea Scrolls. And I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for listening to the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast. Please like and subscribe wherever you like and subscribe. And if you have questions for me, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, feel free to reach out using the links below or go to my YouTube channel, Kinkella Teaches Archaeology. See you guys next time.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.